Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navahitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Lesson 23. Such pure devotee is not only rare, but it's very dear to the heart of Sri Krishna. Okay, 719. After many, many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Realization that everything is connected to the Lord precipitates one's full surrender. The living entity, while executing devotional service or transcendental rituals, after many, many births, may actually become situated in transcendental pure knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal of spiritual realization. In the beginning of spiritual realization, while one is thus giving up one's attachment to materialism, there is some leaning towards impersonalism. But when it's further advanced, he can understand there are activities in the spiritual life and that these activities constitute devotional service. Realizing this, he becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrenders to him. So at the beginning, one is attached to the idea of just one is giving up the material. Right? Giving up the material, there's freedom from anxiety. There's freedom from all the problems of the world. These are all the different elements that will be prominent. Right? But the idea is that with time, then one starts to understand that there are activities in devotional service, that it's not just a mood, right? Like in the beginning, one has to sit and meditate or do something that frees you from the anxieties of the material world. But the idea of activity on that transcendental platform is not there. In other words, you appreciate the transcendental platform and then go back to your regular activities. Right? So activities are... means appreciating that the activities themselves are spiritual. Then that's something different. That's something unique. So, yeah. So then once that's realized, one surrenders to the person. Because right? Otherwise, as we were discussing before, even we're in devotional service performing activities, we're seeing it in relationship to Brahman and Paramatma, right? That you know, it's activities that are supposed to be done, right? We're doing it because they're elevating, they're purifying. You understand here? But it's not connected to the person. You know what I'm saying? Ultimately, we know we're connecting the person. You understand? We're making the distinction here between we understand Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and we're his servant. And we're working for him. But in the moment-to-moment application of that, we may be looking at doing this because I'm supposed to, or doing this because of this, or this is purifying. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the impersonal aspect. But because we're doing connection to Krishna, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan are one substance. Right? So it's connected to the Lord. But it's not that at the moment your inspiration is the person. Does that make sense?
You've heard about the office. You know, he's the Prime Minister and you'd like to meet him, but you can see all the other things about him. They're also already
Yes, you like that. It means you're connected with everything connected with, which is fine. This is the process. But you're not remembering the Lord at that point. But ultimately the goal is to get there. And so it all becomes connected. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? But that transcendental feeling of that personal relationship is not experienced. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? So that's just, you know, one's leaning towards impersonalism. It doesn't mean one's an impersonalist. It just leans towards the Brahman and Paramatma aspects as opposed to the Bhagavan. Though ultimately it's meant for Bhagavan, so therefore we're getting the benefit of that. Does that make sense? But you don't get the same experience as if you appreciate what's going on throughout the experience. Does that make sense? At such time one can understand that Lord Sri Krishna's mercy is everything, that he is the cause of all causes, and that this material manifestation is not independent from him. So now all those aspects that before are the leaning towards the impersonal all become connected to the person. So it's his mercy. You know, he is controlling everything. He's involved in everything. So then everything comes out perfect. You know what I'm saying? But now the experience we're getting from all these various aspects is Bhagavan. Right? He realizes the material world to be a perverted reflection of spiritual variegatedness, and realizes that in everything there's a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, so reflection. So all the variegatedness here, whatever goes on, is a reflection of there, because we'll have the idea: okay, there's the material, then spiritual is different, but it's not. It's that spiritual. The difference is in spiritual. They're fully conscious of the Lord. And they're involved in the variegatedness for Krishna's pleasure. Right? While here, we're involved in the variegatedness for our own pleasure. Does that make sense? It's the same. Yeah. But the activity is the same. That doesn't change. Right? And everything is related to Krishna. There's nothing that's not related. You can see everything related. You know, so everything's by Krishna's mercy. So it's his mercy that everything is there. Everything's connected. Right? It's not that... Okay, it's Krishna's the taste of water. But it's Krishna's mercy that he's come as the taste of water. You understand? Krishna's the taste of water. There you're dealing with the Brahman aspects or the Paramatma aspects. But that it's his mercy that he has come as the taste of water. Then that's, you're dealing with Bhagavan, but in the manifestation it's Brahman or Paramatma. You understand? So it takes on a different flavor. Yes.
Can you be dealing with the Bhagavan aspect and not fully realize it?
Can you deal, means, yes, means, that's what he's saying, is we understand Krishna is the ultimate goal. So there's nothing... We are our personalists, but we're leaning towards the impersonal manifestations of Godhead because we're not thinking of the person. Right? You understand? Because we're doing something because we're supposed to, or we'd like to do this ourselves, but we are willing to connect it to the Lord. You understand? So they're not as, the realization of the personal isn't as strong as it could be. But it will get there, right? By association of devotees, by that determination, then it happens. Okay. Does that make sense? Thus he thinks of everything in relationship to Vasudeva or Sri Krishna. Such a universal vision of Vasudeva precipitates one's full surrender to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna as the highest goal. Such surrendered souls are very rare. So that means that precipitates one's full surrender. It means if one is a devotee practicing the devotional process, one has surrendered. But then there's full surrender. Just like there's devotional service, then there's pure devotional service. So we're not saying that there isn't surrender. It's full surrender.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then that then comes to the point, is that when one is able to appreciate Krishna everywhere and everything, and that it's his mercy that he's expanded and is doing all these different aspects, then one naturally fully surrenders. Right? Yes.
As it was said that the demons, they are gliding towards hell, but it seems for the neophyte devotees that it's a very hard struggle for Krishna consciousness. You know, it's much more work to go up.
It's not more work to go up than down. Is the budding materialist struggling? Yeah. But we're saying the demons are gliding. Hell means that these are the acharyas. They're the perfected materialists. Okay. You know, pure, unalloyed materialism. So then, they're gliding, okay. You know, like that. Just like we see the pure devotees, then they're very pleasantly, you know, connected to Krishna.
Like once they achieve taste, then the process
accelerates. So the demons don't have taste for their materialism? Yeah. They have taste, they have attachment. Yeah. They have no doubts that by their endeavor they're going to be 100% satisfied.
Materialistic prema.
Yes. Well, it's called lust. You know, so they're fully situated in. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Here the word Vasudev is used, like such a universal vision of Vasudev precipitates.
Mm-hmm.
So is there any specific reason for using this Vasudev name here?
Vasudev means Vasudeva Sarvamiti, because he's used in connection, because Vasudev is the, specific exact, no, I don't know. But it would be in connection, because Vasudev is used generally in connection with the creation. So then the universe means being able to see Krishna in everything. Then that element is, because otherwise, if you don't see Krishna in everything, how will you be able to think of him in everything? You know, think of him and always be absorbed in it.
Isn't it also that this universal vision happens on the platform of Vasudev Sattva? So that could be a connection there?
Yeah, you could say. But he's meaning the exact meaning of Vasudev. Uh-huh. You know, like Govinda means, you know, the Lord of the senses and the cows and like that. Yeah. Such surrendered souls are very rare. Right? So he's rare but dear to Krishna. Like that, because he always sees everything connected to the Lord, so naturally the Lord will be always thinking of him. Someone's always thinking of you, or you think of them. Right?
When it says they're very rare, does that mean that it's in the external energy? In the material world, they're very rare.
Yeah, I mean, the spiritual world, everyone is
that's
such a person.
Exactly. And that
it means here.
Basically means that they're on their way out.
Yeah, means you have unlimited living entities in the material world.
Mm.
So such a person is very rare amongst those unlimited. Right? 629. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same supreme, everywhere. The devotee is the perfect seer. A Krishna conscious yogi is the perfect seer because he sees Krishna, the Supreme. Situated in everyone's heart is Super Soul, Paramatma. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hrideshe Arjuna Tishtati. The Lord in his Paramatma feature is situated within both the heart of the dog and that of the Brahmana. The yogi sees equally because he sees that all living entities, although in different situations, according to the results of fruit of work, in all circumstances remain the servants of God. Right? So he sees them all as equal. It doesn't mean that his interaction with them is the same. Right? It means the dog thinks he's a dog, so you deal with him as a dog. Right? You can't deal otherwise. Right? So the great sage, you might in the association with others, discuss, you know, about Krishna conscious philosophy. But as we mentioned, you know, if you go and go sit down next to a dog and start talking philosophy, he tends to just get up and move somewhere else, right? Because he's not interested, right? You know, I mean, he's not gross about it. He doesn't, you know, bite your arm off or something. He just, you know, lets you know he's not interested, right? But the Brahman, then he'll discuss with them as a Brahman, right? You know? So whatever is their conditioned circumstance, you deal with that. Because the rules of Dharma Shastra are the considerations of the nature of the soul and the condition and the conditioning, the specific conditioning. So according to conditioning, then you define how you deal with somebody. Does that make sense? If they're older, you deal one way. If they're younger, you deal another way. If they're in this situation or that. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's based on the external. We can say, oh, but then we're that, we're not. No. It's not that you deal with the human being as a dog and the dog as a human being, or it doesn't matter. No, that's whimsical. Right? Because as soon as we think there's no rule, then whimsical is our first mm-hmm. option. Right? Okay. But he sees that all means all, right, the results of the previous work, so that's why one's a Brahmin and one's a dog, right? But the souls are the same. So it, give it time, and the one who's a Brahmin now could be the dog could be the Brahmin. It's just a matter of how many, you know, some bursts and things change. While in the material energy the living entity serves the material senses, and while in the spiritual energy he serves the Supreme Lord directly. In either case, the living entity is the servant of God. The vision of equality is perfect in a person in Krishna consciousness. So he's going to be doing the same thing. He's a servant of God. He's the soul. He's a servant of God. But one is serving and one is not. You know, and depending on how he's not serving, that's what kind of conditioning he has. Yeah, so this vision of quality is perfect in a person in Krishna consciousness. They can see that nicely this way. So this sage that they're speaking about, like the perfect seer, the Krishna conscious yogi. Right? Because yoga means connect to the Lord, so he's able to see everything in connection to the Lord. That's why he's the highest yogi. Right? Because the other connects, when he's doing his asanas, that's connected to the Lord, and other things are connected to that. But you know, then he sees everyone as the servants of the Lord. Right. Okay. Serves the material senses also. Yeah. He's serving the sense because he has to make the arrangement for the sense and the sense object to come in contact with each other. Mm-hmm. That's essentially the relations between the sense and the sense object. Because that's where it ends. The result of the sense meeting the sense object, this is all one's looking for. So that makes you the servant of the senses. Because you have to make that arrangement. The senses don't make the arrangement. You have to make the arrangement. Does that make sense? Like the tongue just tastes. You have to go to all the trouble to go out and make the money and go to the market and do the cooking, pick it up, put it in your mouth, do all the chewing. You know, all that. You have to do the work. Right? And the sense just sits there. So does that make sense? Yeah. So a servant of the senses. So the devotee then directly serves the Lord because he is the relationships with the Lord. And so that engaging the senses is secondary.
Or is that happiness that comes from the Vishai and Ashai coming together and then the observing that, then the living, you know, the mind, like observing the happiness appear in the mind, that's the wishful thinking. Whereas whenever the living entity acts it as an instrument bringing Radha and Krishna together, then the happiness is genuine.
Yes, yes. Because the Vishai is Krishna, yeah. Right? And the Ashrai is his energies. Yeah. So if we assist the energies, then it's there, right? So in any case, we're a servant. But whether we're serving the energy, you know, the ashray, you know, for the purpose of pleasing God, or simply as we're serving as the servant of the senses. You know what I'm saying? Because the benefit we don't really get. I mean, there's some experiences there, but it's not that it in itself is of any significance. You know what I'm saying? You know, the engagement of the senses doesn't result in anything other than just what experience is there when the sense contacts the sense object. Does that make sense? But you're doing the same thing in Krishna consciousness, but the focus is not on the sense and sense object, it's on Krishna. So the relationship remains, because our relationship with Krishna is always there. But the sense and the sense object, that direct interaction, that's as long as it's contacting, you get the experience. As soon as it's not, you put something in your mouth, you get the taste. As soon as you swallow, there's no taste. It's gone. Right? So that's why it's so dissatisfying to the living entity. Because it doesn't last. So you have to find more and more sensual engagement to call something a relationship. Does that make sense? But here is that you're interacting with Krishna to please Krishna. So whatever the situation is, you're engaging the senses in that situation. Does that make sense?
The happiness or satisfaction comes because of the relationship.
Yes.
So like in that. The senses, there is no possibility to have happiness because there is no relationship.
Yeah, there's no relationship. The relationship is between the sense and the sense object, because we're neither. You know? So the point is instead of just the sense and sense object, means we're, you know, it's Krishna, so we have a relationship with Krishna. Right? And so then that interaction is in support of that relationship with Krishna. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if you have there's yourself and a friend. There's a relationship. Now let's say we put some prasad there. Then, you know, you'll take prasad, but the relationship will be, you know, the focal point. You know what I'm saying? Now we take away the relationship, you only have something to eat. You know, so that's all there is. You know what I'm saying? So the other one's in connection with the Lord, so it continues. It's always there. So since the yogi can see the Lord, you know, everywhere and in everything, so the relationship is always there. You know what I'm saying? That's why sadhana is there, because we don't see the Lord everywhere, but in certain situations we'll see the Lord. Like when we're sitting in the temple in front of the deities chanting japa, then we can appreciate that the Lord is there. Does that make sense? Right, so that's why then all these nice activities that are obvious that the Lord is present, you know, those are focused on first, because those would be the most inspiring, and those are also the main focuses anyway. But the idea is that everything being connected to the Lord, then at all times one can see the Lord and be conscious of the Lord. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'll have to listen to that last sentence again, because my mind's trying to, I was like, I knew it makes sense. And I was like, no, I just, you said something about
that. I wouldn't know that.
Okay.
It's in there.
You can rewind that.
6:30. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Basic principle of Krishna consciousness. The person in Krishna consciousness certainly sees Lord Krishna everywhere, and he sees everything in Krishna. Such a person may appear to see all separate manifestations of the material energy, but in each and every instance he is conscious of Krishna, knowing that everything is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. Right. So when it says here, he appears to see all separate manifestations. But in his mind, he sees the manifestation, the variety that's there, but he doesn't consider them separate. Right? Because we're saying, okay, well, that's the temple, and now this is, you know, the house. No, but it's for the devotee, it's all, it's not separate, it's all Krishna's. Right? Because that's a building that belongs to Krishna. This is also a building that belongs to Krishna. Right? Because we think it's my house. No, no, it's a building. And if everything belongs to Krishna, then this also is a building, it belongs to Krishna. So there's no separate manifestation. Right? There's the principle of building. That's Krishna. So it doesn't matter what the building is, it's still Krishna. Right? So the bird, that sense of security and hominess that they feel sitting in their nest is the same as, you know, a human being sitting in a house that they're comfortable with. Does that make sense? It's no different. Right? Just that, you know, they don't have to worry about, you know, taking, you know, 18 months to build and mortgages and all that. They just go out, find some sticks, and, you know, like that, and build a nest, you know. Like that. Does that make sense? Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. So there's nothing that's existing separately from the Lord, because we're thinking something is separate. That's why that separatist mentality, passion, ignorance, creates that separatism. Right? Ignorance, so you can't see things as illusion, you can't see things properly. And the duality, then you see it's this and that. That's what's important about it. This part's good, that part's bad. But no, it's Krishna that's important. So Krishna's what's good. Not seeing a connection to Krishna, that's what's bad. But it's still the same thing. Right, so whatever one's attached to, it can't exist, it only exists because of Krishna. Right? And he's the Lord of it. So that means what we're attached to, its actual purpose, is to be engaged in Krishna's service. But we think we can engage it separately, just on our own purpose. But the point is, we want to be involved with that, so therefore you're involved with it, but just seeing that it belongs to Krishna. And he's the Lord of it. And its existence is simply because Krishna's involved. Right? So then, therefore, seeing all the sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana connection to Krishna, then we can be involved in the activity, right? Be satisfied we're involved in that activity, but at the same time, it pleases Krishna. Until such time that we just want to please Krishna. And then we perform the activities for his pleasure. Right? That's why there's a point of being God-conscious and it being free from karma and jnana. Because you can be God-conscious, but it's not free from karma and jnana. Because we'll say, oh no, you can't be God-conscious if it's not free. No, you can be conscious. But being conscious of it, do you want that result to be connected to Krishna? Or do you want it for yourself? Is one not God-conscious when one's praying to the deity to fulfill a material desire? Right? One is God-conscious.
So karma inherently means for oneself.
Yes. Because otherwise it's knowledge of Krishna and activity in Krishna consciousness. Right? So that's why we will get distracted. Oh, no, but you know the technical words, karma, yoga, jnana, karma, you know, all these things like that. No, it's the same thing. The activities of Krishna consciousness are what karma yoga is. Right? The knowledge of Krishna, that's what jnana yoga is based on. The difference is Krishna means activities for Krishna means it's to please Krishna. Right? Karma yoga means it's something connected to your conditioning that you're doing connected to the Lord. Does that make sense? But at the same time, as if you're just referring to activity in Krishna consciousness, you can say karma yoga in a positive way. You know, you're just being exact about which aspect of devotional service is being applied.
And yoga mishra bhakti here is more of a negative.
Yeah, when you say mishra, you're pointing out what's mixed.
So
when you say karma yoga, you're talking about the positive. But when you say devotional service, then you're just talking about, you know, then you're talking about that devotion which is being performed.
So you would then have a tendency to use karma yoga about the person and mishra bhakti about the activity, maybe, or
no. There's karma, mishra would mean the mentality, okay. Because the point is if it's connected to the Lord, then it becomes perfect. It's not connected, it's not. So you're God conscious, so therefore you wanted this activity, but you want it for yourself. Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, that's why they're free from karma and jnana. So that's what it says, that this level of understanding precipitates full surrender. Because you're fully God conscious at all times, places, and circumstances. In that, you can appreciate His Lord's mercy and surrender to the Supreme Person. Does that sound right? Yeah. So we get to that platform by acting in Krishna consciousness. So then we start to see Krishna in everything. Because it's not that you have to be conscious of everything. You only have to be conscious of what's important for you in that situation connected to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Right? It means you might bring in some detective and he'll see so many things. But, you know, there can be, the point is if you're absorbed in Krishna, you see what in that situation you could use for Krishna. So if you're not conscious of anything else, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So when you stay conscious of everything, the focus means that whatever you are seeing, you're seeing it in relationship to the Lord. Intimate relationship between the Lord and the devotee. Krishna consciousness is the development of love of Krishna, a position transcendental even to material liberation. So Krishna consciousness is the development of love of Krishna. At this stage of Krishna consciousness, beyond self-realization, the devotee becomes one with Krishna in the sense that Krishna becomes everything for the devotee, and the devotee becomes full in loving Krishna. An intimate relationship between the Lord and the devotee then exists. In that stage, the living entity can never be annihilated, nor is the Supreme Personality Godhead ever out of sight of the devotee. To merge in Krishna is spiritual annihilation. Devotee takes no such risk. So he's beyond self-realization, because self-realization here in this context means he's just understanding the self, that he's the soul, not the body. You know, he's Brahman, part and parcel of the Lord. So this is beyond that, because it's all connected with Krishna. Right? And so then here's the thing, is that becomes one with Krishna in the sense that Krishna becomes everything for the devotee. So that just mood of, right? Because you think about it, when they're saying Brahmananda, what are they talking about? The situation or the experience? Right? So Brahmananda is what they're trying to get to. Merging in Brahman is just the situation or the process. But what they want is Brahmananda. Right? So that's where their oneness is. Right? The other is just a fact. So the thing is here, is that that oneness with the Lord, that's experienced. Right? But it's an experience. It's not the situation. The situation is you're separate, the Lord is separate. But because the mood is common. That makes the oneness. Right? Right? Because in other words, the soul is experiencing the happiness of the complete soul. That's Brahmananda. Right? But it's without any definition. Right? That's why it's impersonal. Right? But here you're experiencing the happiness of Krishna. Right? But it's personal. It's with all the different qualities. It's with pastimes. Does that make sense? So that sense of oneness is what people are looking for. They're just looking. You want to feel part of a group or part of a family, or you understand? Yes.
Mars, the materialist, he'll be very happy whenever he has a day off and he doesn't have to go to work.
Yes.
And whereas the devotee feels.
Because then he becomes one with his armchair.
Yes. And the devotee feels that he doesn't have enough time in the day to serve Krishna.
Yes.
So, yeah.
But still, there's no anxiety.
What is it that makes the living entity have this disease? What is that? Is that tamaguri?
Yes, it's ignorance. Because you figure by doing nothing, then you're going to be happy. Because he's not satisfied as the soul, so he's always going to tend towards the element of what do you call it?
Armchair Ananda.
Yes. He's going to, of just himself. Does that make sense? But at the same time, it's a symptom of the misapplied masculine mentality.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I've controlled so much, now I can sit back and not control everything. And I'll be happy in that.
That's like whenever the man, he does something nice for the wife and then expects to
it'll last forever. Yeah, but the point is it's come from endeavor. So how long does the result of endeavor last? You know what I'm saying? That's one thing. Then the other thing is that the situation. But the point is the relationship is tasted because of the interaction. So he's made the mistake that the situation doesn't generate the experience. It's working with the situation generates. So the reason he experienced it is because he was working with it. So now if you just sit back, but it's no longer being interacted with. So it's not going to give a continued result.
So it's a contamination of like Purusha Bhav?
It's the Purusha Bhav, but it's ignorance.
Yes.
Because one is Purusha Bhav is simply one's existence.
Right.
But the problem is you have to interact with others. Right? So then that means it brings in another aspect. But we're only acknowledging just we are the controller. Right? So how do others fit into that? It's just who we control and therefore who we enjoy. So all it is part of our identity. So people don't really get beyond identity. So therefore the ones that are confident, they do better. Somebody who's not confident doesn't do well because the sambandha isn't established. You know what I'm saying?
So sometimes one finds the Krishna consciousness and one does some endeavor, makes some endeavor, and there's results.
Mm-hmm.
And happiness, Vaishnava satisfied, Krishna satisfied, and then one goes to the.
Yeah, but then that's ignorance.
Right.
It means he's done that activity, that's there, it's eternal, it's not going to go away.
Yeah.
But what he's missing is it's the activity that creates that. Because otherwise then the self-satisfaction is neutral. So you're appreciating it. You're appreciating God's position, the greatness, your position. But you're not interactive on that platform.
So, and that's Vigyan. That's the difference between Vigyanamoy and Anandamoy. Vigyanamoy is just.
Yeah, you could say Vigyanamoy is the element of. I mean, you would be able to take all those and define them on a transcendental platform. But in general speaking, when we're dealing with it, you know what I'm saying? It means if the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world, it means all the elements of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha are there in their original, natural forms within prema. Does that make sense? So it means that Anandamoya includes all the others, but in their natural state, not in their perverted state. In the perverted state, they become like separated. Right. So, but according to that, then taking it that, you know, Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha are material, and prema is transcendental. We're not looking at within prema. Then yes, then the Vijnanamoy means where you're focusing on, you know, we're the soul, we're not the body, all living entities are connected to Krishna, seeing all that and everything. But you know that because you know Krishna's a person, that's why it continues and goes to prema. While the impersonalist doesn't know, he just comes up to that point and stops. You know, so that's why it's fun. We play with this becoming one with Krishna. But what we're meaning is the mood and all that. We don't mean it's living entities. You know, the Mayavada, oh yes, yes, one, because you know, they're just attached to one. You know, so that's their issue. They got oneness issues. Got answered?
I'm satisfied.
Okay. Just let him talk long enough, it works out.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't have to raise your hand, you know.
Exactly. Right? I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, cool. So then, so if you just wait longer, he brings the bucket then.
I've never tried that.
His relationship is complete. Okay, yeah.
Okay. It is stated in the devotee takes no such risk because he doesn't want to risk the relationship. Right? Because he's on the liberated platform. Because it's beyond self-realization. But he's not willing to take the risk that it's going to just remain at that. He's going to be involved in that personal interaction. It is stated in Brahma Samhita 5:38. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is always seen by the devotee whose eyes are anointed with the pulp of love. He is seen in his eternal form of Shyamasundara, situated within the heart of the devotee. At this stage, Lord Krishna never disappears, so this is the other aspect that's being given there. Right? I'm never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. At this stage, Lord Krishna never disappears from the sight of the devotee, because he can see Krishna in everything. He sees Krishna's mercy in everything. Nor does the devotee... Lord Krishna never disappears from the sight of the devotee, nor does the devotee ever lose sight of the Lord. Right? Because the Lord being able to be seen is by his mercy. So the devotee is always looking for the Lord in everything. Right? And the Lord is always present in everything. So by the Lord's mercy, then the devotee can always see him. Does that make sense? In the case of a yogi who sees the Lord as Paramatma within the heart, the same applies. Such a yogi turns into a pure devotee and cannot bear to live for a moment without seeing the Lord within himself. So he sees the Lord. And so now he's going to see him everywhere. And so with time, then he always just wants to be able to see the Lord. Right? So it comes to the same platform. Just that, you know, he had to go through so much difficulty. For the devotee, it's very easy and nice. Right? In other words, the yogi controlling the senses means he has to stop the senses. Pratyahara means the senses are pulled in, means they're not engaged. But for the devotee, then they just engage them. You take prasad, you see the form of the deity, smell the incense, so they're engaged. That's the difference. Right? So it's very easy, very pleasant. That's why I said joyfully perform. Well, this path of the yogi interested in Paramatma, that's very difficult.
Well, from a dualistic point of view, it seems to devaluate devotional service because it's easy.
Yes, it means we always have this idea that higher must be more difficult, but actually it works much better. You know what I'm saying? You have the cheap bicycle and you have the very expensive bicycle. Expensive, it works better.
Yeah.
Right? But it's very simple. You know, it doesn't have all the decals all over, it doesn't have all this and that and different things. It's just very simple. It works better.
It's easy once you've got the right attitude.
Yes. They
said that the Vaishnavas perform the severe austerities of controlling their eating.
No, it's just saying before is that those who, for many births, who if they perform pious activities and done all this, then they can come to the point of surrender. So it's been done, but the point is it's Krishna consciousness is very easy, right? Does that make sense? Because you don't see the problem. You know, let's give an example. Is that, what's his name? Bilva Mangal. When he was going to visit his friend, the prostitute, were there any problems?
Yeah.
But did he perceive any problems?
No.
No. That's the point.
Yeah.
If you're so absorbed, you don't see, they're not problems, they're just what you deal with. That's the situation, you deal with it.
Yeah. It all becomes part of the relationship.
Yeah.
Did you say that?
Yeah. Okay. 6:31. Such a yogi who engages in the worshipful service of the Supersoul, knowing that I and the Supersoul are one, remains always in me and in all circumstances. So I and the Supersoul are one. He's not seeing as separate. Right? When he sees everything's connected to the Supersoul, then he doesn't have any problem. Right? The difficulty comes is if he only sees Supersoul and doesn't actually understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? That. So he's only understanding the super soul manifestation of Godhead, right? Not his manifestation as Krishna, the Supreme Person, as Bhagavan. There's no difference between the devotee and the perfect yogi. A yogi who's practicing meditation on the Supersoul sees within himself the plenary portion of Krishna as Vishnu, with four hands holding conch, wheel, club, and lotus flower. The yogi should know that Vishnu is not different from Krishna. Krishna, in this form of Supersoul, is situated in everyone's heart. Furthermore, there is no difference between the innumerable Supersouls present in the innumerable hearts of the living entities. Nor is there a difference between a Krishna-conscious person always engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna and a perfect yogi engaged in meditation on the Supersoul. So, in other words, when the person has come to jnana and samadhi, then there's no difference, because it says perfect yogi. It doesn't say the practicing yogi, the beginning yogi. No, then there's, you know, because he's not focused on the Lord. Right? so. The yogi in Krishna consciousness, even though he may be engaged in various activities while in material existence, remains always situated in Krishna. So both of these yogis, they're absorbed in Krishna. Therefore, whatever situations they're in, whatever activities they're performing, he's always situated in Krishna. Because you see everything in relation to Krishna. So therefore, everything is situated in Krishna.
On a wedding, the innumerable super souls, they're all the same. There's some example about Tulsi, that Tulsi in many forms, she's still one person.
Yeah, it's just one person. It's not many persons, it's still one person.
Maybe more, many manifestations, but it's just the example is given is that you've put so many pots filled with water. You know, at noontime, if you look in each pot, the sun is inside each pot. But there's only one sun. So it's the same person. Right? But he's unlimited, so he can be conscious of everything simultaneously. So he just has all these manifestations that he functions as. In other words, the mentality is not different. You know, it's not like Krishna and Balaram, where they're different moods. You know, so therefore all the Vaikuntha, you know, the manifestation of the 20, they're all have the same mood. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Slight difference, subtlety in mood. But it's still, they're all, the idea, I'm God, so there's only one person there. It's Krishna. Yes, this is the manifestation of his godness.
The Brihad Bhagavad Gita of Gautama, he's being directed towards that vision. He's always caught up in that vision. Always looking for his worst leading. He sees certain aspects as he's going through the vision.
Yeah, no, he's always looking for Krishna. That's why he's not completely satisfied at whatever level he's at. You know, because he'll ask a question, you know, so then naturally he has to go somewhere else to find it. So it just slowly, slowly takes him up through all the different realms. Vritti, the next lesson describes the attractive qualities of the pure devotee, which makes him dear to Krishna. Because we've already said he is rare, and he's dear to Krishna. He's always absorbed in Krishna. Krishna is always absorbed in him. So now we get the element of what are the attractive qualities of the devotee. Lesson 24. There are some typical signs in the person of such a pure devotee of Godhead that indicate his purity. Yeah, so typical, you know, means the standard. Right here, typical doesn't mean ordinary. You know, typical means just, you know, it's standard. Sometimes you hear, like in the West, we say it's typical. It's just, it's generally, you know, not seen in it, you know, as something special. But in India, if you, let's say someone cooks something, right? You know, according to a tradition, you say that's very typical. You know, meaning that it's exactly, you know, within the line of that tradition.
So it's a positive thing.
Yes, a positive thing. So here, there are some typical signs, meaning that there are very standard signs that can be appreciated. 12, 13, and 14. One who is not envious, but is a friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. Right, so he's giving the qualities, and then that they're dear to Krishna. Right? It's rare, and it's rare because Krishna is very satisfied. Right? So these are the qualities that attract Krishna, right? Because he has all these qualities. Right? He's not doing something because of the benefit he'll get from it. you know. A pure devotee accepts all suffering as mercy of Krishna. A pure devotee is never disturbed in any circumstances, nor is he envious of anyone, nor does a devotee become his enemy's enemy. His enemy's enemy means his enemy's enemy. Means he doesn't become the friend. Enemy's enemy.
Somebody's antagonistic to you, you don't turn around and reciprocate.
Oh, okay, okay. I was thinking in the political circle.
Yeah.
Means your enemy's enemy is your ally.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because you have something in common. So if you're both, and it's always the one, if you're here, then the next kingdom here. So you're his enemy. That means the one on this side is his enemy.
So that would mean people.
Right, so now the two of you are friends. Because therefore, if he attacks one, the other will attack, so he can't do anything. So then everything's very peaceful.
So he doesn't become his own ally?
Yes. Yes. That'll work. He does not become his enemy's enemy. He thinks, this person is acting as my enemy due to my own past misdeeds. So it's better to suffer than to protest. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8 it is stated that tat tenu kampam sukamikshamano bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam. Whenever a devotee is in distress or has fallen into difficulty, he thinks that is the Lord's mercy upon him. He thinks, thanks to my past misdeeds, I should suffer far, far greater than I am suffering now. So it's by the mercy of the Supreme Lord that I am not getting all the punishment I am due. I'm just getting a little. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is always calm, quiet, and patient, despite any distressful conditions. Devotee is also kind to everyone, even to his enemy. Because he's just seeing Krishna, serving Krishna. So there's no one that's actually a problem. So then he doesn't have any problem being nice, right? Doesn't mean he's foolish, but it just means he can be nice. Does that make sense? You're not over-friendly, you're not under-friendly. You're just what's appropriate for the situation. Okay, so the past misdoods, whatever one's getting, it's only a portion of what one would be normally allotted. So the devotee is very, very, you know, appreciative of Krishna's kindness. Devotee's transcendental qualities enable him to fix his mind on Krishna. Nir mama means that a devotee does not attach much importance to the pains and trouble pertaining to the body because he knows perfectly well that he is not the material body. So it'll have problems, but you don't attach too much to it because it's not you anyway. He does not identify with the body, therefore he is freed from the conception of false ego and is equipoised in happiness and distress. He is tolerant and he is satisfied with whatever comes by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Because it's not intolerance comes, you don't want that situation. No, but it's whatever comes by the Lord's grace, then that's what he works with. If it's more nice, great. If it's not so nice, then it doesn't matter. He does not endeavor to achieve something with great difficulty. But in other words, if there's an idea that this would be a good situation for service, he makes that endeavor. If it comes, nice. But if it's going to be too much of an endeavor, he doesn't do it. Right? Does that make sense for himself? Means, but if he has the order of guru, then he's willing to go through all kinds of difficulties. But he's, you know what I'm saying? But he's not stubborn. He's seeing what's going to be the best for the situation and makes that endeavor.
So too much endeavor would mean attached to the endeavor?
Yeah, attached. It means something for yourself, some benefit for yourself. Like you go to get something to eat and there's nothing there. and then you run all over, okay? So you go, there's nothing home, so you go to the restaurant, but they've just closed for the break between, you know, lunch and dinner. You know, so then you go to the snack shop, but, you know, he had to go take his, you know, kid to the FRO. You know, so you just, you know, as you go around, then, you know, there's nothing there. Right? So then you just understand, okay, Krishna has a plan. I don't eat, you know. So you don't over-endeavor, you know. But if you're supposed to go out and get something for Krishna, then you go and get it. You know?
Whereas tolerance comes from in direct proportion to knowledge and attachment.
Tolerance, you say?
Yeah, he is tolerant and he's satisfied with whatever comes. Thinking about it's like a, you know, a young bamboo can bend nicely, but the old bamboo is just not.
That's why you don't bend old bamboos. Oh, here we go. I was looking in the wrong paragraph. I said, why didn't I see that? No, the point is that whatever is one's position, one does that for Krishna. One connects that to Krishna. Does that make sense? So therefore, whatever the situation is, that's what goes along with that endeavor. So then it's not a problem. Because he's only doing something connected to Krishna. So however the situation transforms, then that's, you know, what he'll deal with. So he doesn't become disturbed or...
Is Arjuna tolerant on Kurukshetra?
Is Arjuna tolerant in Arjuna? Yeah, because he would go and individually fight with everybody in that rather than pulling out a Brahmastra and just, you know, nuking them all at the moment.
Okay.
It's basically could have done that.
But like sometimes it could be difficult to see, should I act for Krishna now or should I be tolerant?
The point is being tolerant has to be acting for Krishna also. It has to be beneficial to Krishna also.
Yeah.
It's not that, because otherwise the tolerance is just for ourselves. That's what it's meaning by we don't see all these different endeavors separate from the Lord.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because we'll say tolerance is good. But why is tolerance good? Only because it attracts Krishna.
Yeah.
But otherwise it's not of importance if it doesn't attract Krishna.
So tolerance is actually a mentality more than an activity?
Yeah, it's a mentality.
I'm thinking specifically, you know, right?
But you look at all these. He's not envious.
Yeah.
Kind friend to all living.
Yeah.
Does not think himself a proprietor. Free from false ego.
Yeah.
Equal in both happiness and distress.
Yeah.
Tolerant, self-satisfied, self-controlled.
Yeah.
That here, engaged in devotional service determination.
Mm.
So he's engaged in devotional service. The focus on the determination. His mind and intelligence fixed on me. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So therefore, it's the mentality that makes one.
Mm, yeah.
You know. Yes.
Not identifying with the body.
Yes.
I've been told by other senior mothers that when they get older, they have to do a lot more for their body.
But it's not that you identify with it. I mean, it's just like, let's say, you're in the kitchen, you're cleaning the pot.
Mm-hmm.
You have to identify, I am the pot. Therefore, you clean it nicely. And if you think, I'm not this pot, you won't clean it properly. In other words, the pot belongs to Krishna, so therefore you have to take care of it according to its need.
Identifying sickness in the body?
No. Identifying means you think the soul and the body, or that soul and the sickness, or the soul and the social position, you know, the soul and the happiness, soul and the strength, that's equal. That's identifying with. It's not that you don't use intelligence and identify. This is talking about the ego. Because intelligent means it identifies something, it discerns. But here the identification meaning as ego. Is that something? Therefore, I mean, he does not endeavor much to achieve something with great difficulty, right? Therefore, he is always joyful. Interesting point. No? He's always joyful because he's not over-endeavoring, you know, for some activity. Right? People are miserable because they over-endeavor. Right? And so over-endeavor means more than what you can deal with. Like Prabhupada says, overeating is not defined by the volume. You know, means compare one, compare the other. It's what you can digest. You're the one eating it, not someone else. Right? So if you have trouble digesting one chapati, then one chapati is overeating. Does that make sense? It's not that, well, hey, he just ate 20. That's him. If he can digest it, then fine. You know, so... So, therefore, how much endeavor fits your nature? Right? Kshatriyas can do very big, massive works. Brahmins generally don't. Right? You know, unless it's directly connected to the Lord. But otherwise, it's not done. Does that make sense? Just the nature is there. He is a completely perfect mystic because he is fixed in the instructions received from the spiritual master. And because his senses are controlled, he is determined. But he's a perfect mystic. He's a completely perfect mystic. Okay, determination is mind, intelligence fixed on that. So his mind is engaged because his intelligence is engaged in following his instructions. So then he becomes, you know. Therefore, being fixed like that, he is engaging the senses in Krishna's service. So he is determined. Right? Because it's for Krishna, so he's determined. So it's different from the point before. He's not over-endeavoring. Because you make an endeavor if that doesn't work, so either you have to try something else to get the work done, or that's not what's supposed to be done now. It's not that the work doesn't get done. You know what I'm saying? You have a large amount of stuff you're trying to, you have an idea it'll fit into this pot, but it's not fitting into the pot, you know, and therefore it's getting too full in the pot, and so it's so full that if you hardly move it, it'll spill out of the pot. But you're very, you know, I say determined, yes, to do this, and so then you'll be very carefully put on fire, spilling it and this and that, have to wipe the pot, the stuff dripping off the pots, burning it underneath, making all kinds of, you know, like this. You know what I'm saying? So that's over-endeavor. The point was is go get another pot that's bigger and then pour it all into there. But you'll see, no, this is easier. This pot was here. We're just being practical, Prabhu, and all that kind of stuff. But you just go get the other pot. You know what I'm saying? Then it works better. So the work is getting done, but it's not an over-endeavor. In other words, what's practically working? You make the endeavor where it practically works. Right? He is not swayed by false arguments because no one can lead him from the fixed determination of devotion to service. You know, so, in other words, instructions received from the spiritual master. Right? He's fixed in that. So false arguments meaning that there'll be some other process, or this, he's not swayed by this. Does that make sense? You know, so others will have some idea of what you should do, but he doesn't get distracted.
False arguments usually also is like you can gain so and so benefit if you.
Yeah, yeah. No, there'll always be a benefit there. And some will make it more obvious, and some are very expert at hiding the material benefit. He makes it sound like, you know, it's for some higher purpose. So you only mention that part that shows the higher, you don't mention the rest of it.
So that's quoting Dharma to justify Nietzsche.
Yes.
Fall into that.
Yeah. Or yeah, or sense gratification like this. You know, the whole thing. He is fully conscious that Krishna is the eternal Lord, so no one can disturb him. All these qualifications enable him to fix his mind and intelligence entirely on the Supreme Lord. For the mind and intelligence are connected to the Supreme Lord. If those are connected, the senses and body are automatic, right? Because the senses are part of intelligence and are managed by the mind. It's automatic. So we see here is also his determination, he's fixed. So that would generally mean that that Madhyama platform is the place where these qualities start manifesting. Advanced devotional service is attained by accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Such a standard of devotional service is undoubtedly very rare. But a devotee becomes situated in that stage by following the regulative principles of devotional service. It's also important when we say here, we're going back to the very rare, it doesn't mean that it means amongst living entities. It doesn't mean necessarily amongst devotees. You know what I'm saying? All devotees may have these qualifications. But still, all that group of devotees together, in comparison to all the living entities in the universe, is rare. You know what I'm saying? You know, we think there's a lot of people, but people don't compare at all to, you know, some of the other living entities that are here. So even a human being is rare. Right? Does that make sense? So then we don't take it and compare it within the devotional community. That's a matter of who follows it, then they're one of those rare devotees. Everybody can be such a rare devotee. Right? Furthermore, the Lord says, that such a devotee is very dear to him, for the Lord is always pleased with all his activities in full Krishna consciousness. Because he's doing all the activities to please the Lord. Right? He's in full Krishna consciousness, means all his activities are done to please Krishna. Right? Therefore, the Lord is always pleased with him. 12:15. He by whom no one is put into difficulty, and who is not disturbed by anyone. Right. So means you don't put anyone in difficulty, and it's not disturbed by anyone. Means others are putting you into difficulty. Right. In other words, he doesn't put others into difficulty, but is not disturbed by someone putting him into difficulty. And here also by he by whom no one is put into difficulty means by his endeavor. Right? You know, just like Ajatashatru. You know, he for who there's no one, an enemy has never been born. Means he doesn't see anyone as enemy. Doesn't mean that there aren't people that are inimical towards him. So you're not putting, you are not making any endeavor to put anybody into difficulty. Right? And are not disturbed if someone is making an endeavor to put you into difficulty. But it doesn't mean that the situation comes up that you're not somehow at the wrong place at the wrong time and someone becomes annoyed with that. You know what I'm saying? But you're not making an endeavor to annoy. Who is equal poised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety is very dear to me. He's equipoise in happiness and distress. Means happiness is there, it's experienced. That just, but it's, he's equipoise, it doesn't matter. In any case, he's going to be serving Krishna. So if the situation is nice or not nice, it doesn't matter. He will see how to always be absorbed in his mind and his intelligence on the Supreme Lord. The pure devotee is never disturbed because he is engrossed in Krishna consciousness. No one is put into difficulty, anxiety, fearfulness, or dissatisfaction by such a devotee. Since a devotee is kind to everyone, he does not act in such a way as to put others into anxiety. At the same time, if others try to put a devotee into anxiety, he is not disturbed. It is by the grace of the Lord that he is so practiced that he is not disturbed by any outward disturbance. Actually, because the devotee is always engrossed in Krishna consciousness and engaged in devotional service, such material circumstances cannot move him. Generally, a materialistic person becomes very happy when there's something for his sense gratification in his body. But when he sees that others have something for their sense gratification, he has it. He is sorry and envious. When he's expecting some retaliation from an enemy, he is in a state of fear. And when he cannot successfully execute something, he becomes dejected. A devotee is always transcendental to all these disturbances. Who is always transcendental to all these disturbances is very dear to Krishna. Right, so here are all these different things. What causes? He's equipoise, happiness and stress, fear and anxiety. So something for his sense gratification or not, it doesn't matter. The point is he's going to engage the senses in Krishna's service. So if there's something to engage, nice. If not, he'll just remember Krishna. But for the materialist, he's very happy when there's something to engage his senses, and he's very disturbed when there's not. Yes.
Maharaj, does this mean that a pure devotee, he'll experience happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, but he's not disturbed by it?
On one level, you could say that's there. In other words, the circumstances for it will be there. But it's not necessarily that he... If someone is expecting some retaliation from an enemy, it's a state of fear. But if no one's your enemy, there's no fear. It's just you know that he may do something. So you make preparation to deal with that. Right? But it's not necessarily fear. Understand? But even if there's the element of fear, one takes shelter of Krishna.
So being equipoised and happiness and stress, fear and anxiety, those situations that would normally bring...
Yeah, means he's always Krishna conscious. Yeah. Does that make sense? Because otherwise one's fearful of what's going to happen, everything's going to go away, this, that, blah. But the point is where's Krishna? Krishna doesn't go away. So he's always absorbed in Krishna. So it's not that the situations aren't there. That's why it's being pointed out. In other words, all the situations, happiness, distress, fear, and anxiety, so that's what Prabhupada then defines them. Right? Generally, a materialistic person becomes happy when there's something for his sense gratification. But when he sees others have something for their sense gratification, he hasn't. He is sorry and envious, right? So therefore in distress. So with the distress comes envy. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Because generally speaking, someone, if you have facility, you don't mind someone else having facility. Right? You know, if you're sitting there, you know, in the restaurant and you're eating something, you know, you don't mind everybody else is eating something. But if everybody else has something and your order hasn't come, then, you know, it's like different mentality. Does that make sense? Yeah. So devotee's not disturbed by these disturbing situations. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it does.
Very interesting that this teaching is given to Arjuna on the battlefield.
Yes.
So it means it's difficult to have a situation more difficult to be equipoised.
Yeah, then on the battlefield. Yeah, and one could easily appreciate that.
Yes.
Yeah. So if he can do it there, means you can do it anywhere.
Yes. Zamini uses both sides of the sword.
Because he's equipoise.
Or both hands. He's ambidextrous.
Yes. I would think it's more how he's situated. So, therefore, does it matter how far the chariot's going? He's always standing. Ready.
You mean in the middle of the chariot? Boy.
Basically.
Yeah.
Because a poise is a mentality, it's a situation. It's not what you're doing. Because he's engaged in Krishna's consciousness. But he's not disturbed by any situation. Oh. Class is over. Okay. It's a funny time. Sometimes you talk for a long time and think, you look and wow, a very short time went by, and then another seemed very short.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki,
Jai
Sanavita Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura Prabhupāda ki.
Hare Rama.